Welcome back to Audio Notes. I'm Dmitry Atapin.
And I'm Haeyoung Park. And we are happy you're here with us as we guide you through the third program of the Music in Menlo 2025 season, Constellations Ensemble Magic. The program titled Winds of Change.
In the words of David Finkel, this lively program highlights the wind quintet as a centerpiece of chamber music, akin to the string quartet in tonal balance, depth, and versatility. Enhanced by piano and string collaborations, these ensembles create a variety of rich, colorful soundscapes. Wind chamber music has a fascinating history, stretching back to the Renaissance, when small groups of wind players performed at courts and in public spaces. But it was during the classical era that wind chamber music truly flourished as a distinct genre.
In 18th century Vienna, the wind serenade and divertimento became popular, especially as lively outdoor entertainment. And then, in the early 19th century, the wind quintet emerged, bringing together flute, oboe, clarinet, bassoon, and horn into a unique ensemble defined by its rich blend of varied timbres.
Since then, the wind quintet has become the standard bearer of wind chamber music. The 20th century in particular brought a surge of experimentation as composers, especially the French, explored new tonal colors and textures.
The program takes us on a journey through this landscape, beginning with Beethoven's energetic quintet for piano and winds, followed by Mendelssohn's fiery concertpiece for clarinet, bassoon, and piano.
Loeffler's Rhapsody brings an evocative blend of oboe, viola, and piano, while Mozart's beloved opera arias are reimagined in witty, sparkling arrangements.
And we close with Ludwig Tuell's lush sextet for piano and winds, a late romantic gem that showcases the full expressive range of this expanded ensemble. So let's dive in and experience the magic of Winds of Change. We begin with a remarkable chamber work by Ludwig van Beethoven, his Quintet for Piano and Winds in E-flat major op. 16. Composed in 1796, when Beethoven was in his mid-20s, this piece shows his early mastery and ambition as he worked to establish himself in Vienna as both a composer and virtuoso pianist. The scoring for piano, oboe, clarinet, horn, and bassoon clearly echoes Mozart's Quintet for Piano and Winds in the same key, K452, a piece Beethoven greatly admired. But while this quintet pays homage to Mozart, it also reveals Beethoven's emerging voice, blending charm, wit, and formal elegance with hints of the bold, dynamic personality we associate with his later works. The first movement opens with an extended slow introduction. The grave section sets a grand, almost theatrical tone, beginning with a unison fanfare built on dotted rhythms, a clear nod to the French overture style. Once the allegro unfolds, we hear joyful and spirited exchanges between the piano and winds. Beethoven alternates the textures, letting them take turns in lively conversation. The main theme is bright and elegant, with the piano leading the way. And listen how cleverly Beethoven introduces each of the instruments before the piano breaks away in happy runs. The sparkling piano passage work here even foreshadows the virtuosic writing Beethoven would explore later, such as in his Emperor Piano Concerto, also in E flat major, written about 15 years after this quintet. The middle movement, marked Andante Cantabile, offers a serene and lyrical contrast. First, the piano introduces a delicate theme. When the winds join, the piano weaves gentle arpeggios around their graceful melodies, creating an atmosphere of warmth and intimacy. Beethoven's sensitivity to the wind instrument's timbres is especially evident here, giving each instrument moments to shine and letting their characters emerge. The brief touch of minor mode in the middle section introduced by the horn is a great example of Beethoven's use of each instrument's sound world, providing a poignant tinge of sadness. When the opening theme returns, Beethoven layers in even more ornamentation from all the instruments, leading to an ending that feels both elegant and serene. The final movement, Rondo Allegro Mano Troppo, brings a burst of playful energy. The piano introduces the main theme, and joyful exchanges between the piano and winds follow. The sparkling piano runs here might well reflect Beethoven's showing of his own virtuosity as a pianist. And just like in his piano concertos, Beethoven even leaves space for a solo cadenza partway through the finale. At the premiere, he reportedly extended this cadenza, delighting himself with extra improvisations and, legend has it, playfully fooling the wind players. The humorous interruptions and surprises that mark Beethoven's early style are everywhere in this finale, which races to an exuberant close. When Beethoven submitted this work for publication in 1801, he also arranged it for the more popular combination of piano and strings, hoping to reach a wider audience in the growing music market. But here at Music at Menlo, we are thrilled to present the original piano and wind version, which offers such diverse, colorful textures. This quintet is one of Beethoven's few chamber works featuring winds, and it remains a beloved favorite for its elegance, charm, and lively character. Next, we are excited to present a lively and virtuosic chamber jam by Felix Mendelssohn. His concert piece number 1 in F minor, opus 113, written for clarinet, basset, horn, and piano. Originally titled The Battle of Prague, this piece takes its main theme from a work of the same name by František Kocvara, a Czech composer from the late 18th century. Mendelssohn's own composition was born during a spirited evening of music making at his home in Berlin in 1832. It was written for two of his close friends, Heinrich and Karl Behrmann, a father and son duo who were both renowned clarinetists of their time. Mendelssohn tailored this work to showcase their extraordinary technique and the expressive range of both the clarinet and the basset horn. The unusual pairing of clarinet and basset horn, supported by piano, creates a wonderfully colorful and agile musical dialogue. The concert piece, marked Allegro con fuoco, bursts into life with a bold and fiery opening. It starts with an energetic tutti, followed by dazzling flourishes, first in the clarinet, then echoed by the bassoon. Let us hear from one of the performers, the wonderful clarinetist Sebastian Mantz.
Listen to the beginning of the first movement. Everyone starts with a short motif, then the clarinet does a small cadenza, and after that, the basset horn takes over. And this little phrase where the basset horn stays alone, this is so great to play. on the instrument because it reaches the lowest note on the instrument and it vibrates on the stage in such a way it makes goosebumps.
Tell the truth, did you get goosebumps? From there, the clarinet and bassoon engage in a spirited back and forth, trading rapid figures and playful echoes. The piano drives everything forward, providing rhythmic momentum and harmonic depth. In the middle section, the mood softens into something more lyrical and intimate. The instruments seem to converse like characters in a Shakespearean balcony scene, tender, expressive, and full of nuance. Let's listen in. Then the music lifts again into a playful, joyous final stretch, closing with Mendelssohn's trademark brilliance, light, witty, and full of charm. This piece is a sparkling example of early Romantic chamber music, balancing technical fireworks with expressive warmth, humor, and elegance. It's a perfect showcase of Mendelssohn's remarkable craftsmanship. What makes it even more special is the spirit of friendship and conversation at its heart. You can feel the friendly musical dialogue between father and son, sometimes perfectly in sync, sometimes playfully competing. It's a beautiful reminder that at the core of this work lies a deep friendship brought to life through music. Due to the rarity of the instrumentation, it has become customary to adapt the basset horn part to the bassoon, as you will hear in our concert. This color change actually brings a unique twist to the character of the piece, since both wind parts acquire their own particular personality.
Charles Loeffler was born in Schönberg near Berlin in 1861 to German parents, but interestingly, he was far more drawn to the French musical tradition. In fact, he even considered himself French, claiming that his birthplace was Alsace, which had been annexed by Germany following the Franco-Prussian War. This affinity for French culture was so deep that he insisted he was French by instinct, and he was heavily influenced by the works of French composers like Claude Debussy, Ernst Chausson, and Gabriel Fauré. After his father passed away, Loeffler and his mother fled Germany and traveled throughout Hungary and Switzerland before settling in France. It was there, in Paris, that Loeffler truly found his musical home. His immersion in French culture and music would shape his compositional style for the rest of his life. Loeffler was a gifted violinist from a young age and spent 3 years studying with the legendary Joseph Joachim, a close friend of Johannes Brahms. Loeffler also studied composition in Paris with Ernst Guiraud, who famously taught Debussy and encouraged Loeffler's affinity for French Impressionism and Symbolist poetry. Not long after arriving in the United States in 1881 at the age of 20, Loeffler quickly established himself in the American classical music scene. He joined the Boston Symphony Orchestra as assistant concertmaster, a position he held for 2 decades before stepping away to focus fully on composing and teaching. During his time with the BSO, Loeffler became a central figure in Boston's musical life, helping to introduce French and Russian music to American audiences. After leaving the orchestra, Loeffler devoted himself to composition, creating a body of work that blended French Impressionism with Russian lyricism and late Romantic drama. His music often drew inspiration from French symbolist literature, particularly the works of Paul Verlaine. Loeffler's compositions reflect a deep sensitivity to mood, atmosphere, and the interplay of light and shadow, qualities that align perfectly with the ideals of symbolist art. One of Loeffler's most evocative chamber works is the 1901 rhapsody L'Étang, which translates to The Pond. It's one of 2 rhapsodies he wrote for the unusual trio of oboe, viola, and piano, and it stands as one of his best-known chamber pieces. The inspiration for L'Étang came from a haunting symbolist poem by Maurice Rollinat, which depicts a dark, mysterious pond where sinister stars are reflected in the depths and strange creatures stir beneath the still surface. This imagery clearly resonated with Loeffler's imagination, and he translated these eerie, dreamlike visions into a captivating musical landscape. Here is what oboist James Austin Smith, who will be performing L'Étang at the upcoming concert, had to say about the piece.
I've seen Loeffler's name here and again as a composer, but this work is really his most popular, most often played, and apparently it started its life as a set of songs, 3 songs, for bass, voice, clarinet, and piano. And he then pulled 2 of those songs out and turned them into pure instrumental music for oboe, viola, and piano. I think he chose the instrumentation mostly for the mellowness of it. I mean, maybe we don't think of the oboe as an incredibly mellow instrument, but the way that Loeffler sets the oboe in these pieces, it is quite mellow, at least in the piece that we are going to hear at Music in Menlo, L'Étang, The Pond.
At the offset of the work, and after a brief opening statement, the piano begins to ripple gently, setting the scene. The oboe and viola then enter with motives that seem to reflect the shadowy, still surface of the pond. As the piece unfolds, the oboe often takes on the character of a solitary heron, its phrases plaintive and searching. Meanwhile, the piano creates a watery, impressionistic texture beneath it all, adding a sense of serene wonder. Midway through, the mood shifts, the viola plucks out pizzicato lines, the piano lightens in texture with crisper articulation, and the oboe dances with playful melodies, as if fish are darting around, chasing each other through the water. Eventually, the music circles back to the quiet, mysterious atmosphere of the opening. The piece ends with a hushed, unresolved cadence that leaves a sense of solitude hanging in the air. It's as if we're left standing on the shore, watching the reflection of the moon shimmer on the water, uncertain yet entranced. Here's oboist James Austin Smith once again sharing his thoughts on this extraordinary work.
In the Loeffler Rhapsody, you have this unusual opportunity as an oboe player to be a part of what feels like a little tone poem. There's a kind of journey, a narrative that's really, really satisfying. And I have actually, in my part, written in some of the lines of the poem because it's so clear what music corresponds to what words. And so there's a pretty special sense that you can tell a story with this music.
Le Temps is a rhapsodic soundscape that beautifully bridges the lush emotion of late Romanticism with the shimmering colors of French Impressionism. This beautiful trio is yet another example of how Loeffler's love of poetry and sensitivity to narrative allowed him to craft works that feel like vivid musical paintings. Next on our program is a set of delightful arrangements for wind quintet of opera arias by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. In fact, simply no one understood the expressive voice of wind instruments better than Mozart himself. Whether this his symphonies, piano concertos, or operas, Mozart wrote lines for flute, oboe, clarinet, and bassoon that exploited their lyrical character, tonal color, and technical brilliance. His wind serenades transformed functional outdoor music into something sublime, and his operatic writing revealed how winds can imitate the human voice itself. The bassoon's reedy warmth echoing a baritone's depth, the flute's brightness mirroring a soprano. That makes it entirely fitting that clarinetist Sebastian Mantz has arranged a set of Mozart's vocal arias for wind quintet. Here is what Sebastian himself had to share with us.
So, in general, Mozart probably is the most important composer for me as a clarinetist. And as you might know or not, I was a singer in a boys' choir in my youth. So I sang a lot of pieces and I was included as the first boy in Mozart's magic flute at the opera house in Hanover, where I was born and raised. So there's this direct connection to Mozart's opera music. And of course, I always try to sing on my clarinet as well. So we have the same breathing techniques, you know. And I always tell the students, we can learn a lot from the singers.
This deep personal connection to Mozart's operatic language shapes his arrangements. The selected arias come from three of Mozart's masterpieces. From The Marriage of Figaro, we hear Susanna's playful Al desio di chi t'adora, where the oboe sings her flirtation's lines as she teases Figaro. From Don Giovanni, the clarinet voices the noble Don Ottavio in Dalla sua pace, expressing his loyal, solemn love. And from The Magic Flute, the flute takes on the Queen of the Night, soaring into the stratosphere in one of the most famous and ferocious arias in opera. Here is Sebastian again sharing why he chose the wind quintet as a vehicle for his arrangements.
And of course, the woodwind quintet is the perfect match for that, because it's also one of the most difficult ensembles. You have to work on every detail that the very different colors from each instrument fit perfectly. And then it could sound like an organ, it could sound like a human voice, depending on how you arrange it. And that was very challenging for me, especially with Mozart's music, because if you leave something out or if you want to add something, it's going to be worse than the origin. Definitely. So, challenge accepted. Mozart music is timeless and genius because it reaches your heart. And at the same time, if you analyze his score or his music from an intellectual perspective, you have to say it's perfectly composed. Every note sits where it has to be. You know, there are some composers who are very intellectual and some other composers who are just emotional, but Mozart's music combines it all. It's simple, but it's very sophisticated. And the most natural music you can probably listen to, in my humble opinion.
Thank you, Sebastian. We cannot wait to hear these unique arrangements this summer. Music at Menlo is thrilled to shine a spotlight on a true hidden gem from the late Romantic chamber music repertoire, Ludwig Twill's Sextet in B-flat major for piano and winds, Opus 6. Ludwig Twill was born in 1861 in Bozen, at the time part of Austria's Tyrol region, and now known as Bolzano, Italy. During his lifetime, Twill was a major figure in the vibrant musical life of Munich at the turn of the 20th century. In fact, he was considered part of what became known as the Munich School, alongside his close friend and fellow composer Richard Strauss. The two remained lifelong friends up until Twill's untimely death in 1907 at the age of just 46. While Twill composed operas and orchestral works that earned him considerable respect in his day, it's his chamber music that has truly stood the test of time. Today, his chamber works are enjoying a well-deserved revival. Pieces like his piano quintet, violin sonata, and the stunning sextet for piano and winds continue to capture the hearts of audiences and performers alike. And speaking of performers, let's hear from oboist James Austin Smith, who is featured in this beautiful work.
Ludwig Twill is one of these composers that exists in music history, but didn't necessarily change it. And I think that's okay, because every composer brings something different to the table, and Twill brings to us wind players a really significant, satisfying, and beautifully written work from an era from which we don't have a ton of music, actually, as wind players. So Twill may be among the less significant composers in music history, but specifically to our genre of chamber music and our instruments, our wind instruments, really a very important contributor to the repertoire.
And in this repertoire, the sextet scored for piano, flute, oboe, clarinet, bassoon, and horn stands as one of the finest works. The work was composed in 1888, when the composer was just 27 years old. Twill later revised the work in 1891, refining it into the version we know today. The piece was premiered at the Wiesbaden Festival, with Twill himself at the piano, tackling the virtuosic and demanding keyboard part. The performance was a great success. In fact, his friend Richard Strauss was so impressed, he encouraged Twill to submit the piece for the prestigious Beethoven Award for Composition in Vienna in 1901. Though the sextet didn't win the prize, it was still widely praised for its brilliance and sophistication. The sextet unfolds over four movements, each offering a beautiful blend of charm, lyricism, and technical brilliance. The work is a vivid showcase of color and texture, leaning on the strength of the instrumentation, with each wind instrument bringing its own unique character to the ensemble. Let us hear once again from James Austin Smith.
Tweel had a real sense of what each of our instruments do and why. And so you have this sense as a wind player. Sometimes we're playing wind chamber music and we're not necessarily sure why each of our specific colors, because our colors are so different compared to, say, a string quartet. You're not necessarily sure why you're playing what you're playing. To borrow from the acting world, what's your motivation in this moment? Why is it you, the oboe player, versus them, the flute player, or them, the clarinet player? And Tweel brings a very clear sense of purpose to his composition. So when the first movement opens with this beautiful horn line, you have this sense that only the horn could play that melody.
So let us hear then a moment of this beautiful opening of the first movement marked Allegro Moderato. As you can hear, it's a noble, expansive theme immediately setting a warm and inviting tone. Tweel develops this theme with elegant counterpoint and lush harmonic color. There's a natural, almost conversational quality to the interplay between the piano and winds. Melodies are passed effortlessly from one instrument to another, creating a rich musical dialogue. The movement draws to a calm and reflective close as the opening theme returns, gently shared among all the instruments. With its grace and warmth, this opening movement leaves a deep sense of serenity and nobility. The second movement, Larghetto, offers a tender, lyrical contrast to the first. The wind instruments create a warm, pastoral atmosphere, while the piano provides gentle, supportive textures. The overall mood is introspective, almost nocturnal, with a beautiful sense of calm. In the central section, the music grows more impassioned before returning to its original serenity. Let's hear again from James Austin Smith.
The second movement is this kind of epic Straussian, slow, rich unfolding of melodies. It is so satisfying to play. And I have to say, you know, that very opening, actually, that beautiful horn melody, it kind of sets us off on that journey. And the oboe takes that same melody a bit later on in the movement. But there is something truly heroic about this material. And it really gives you, as wind players, this feeling that you are engaged in music making that is like really fundamental in some way. And you feel connected to an era and a style and a place that we sometimes envy our string and piano colleagues, that they can feel connected in that way to those styles. And in this case, Tweel gives us that opportunity to feel that way.
Now let's listen in. Next comes the gavotte, an elegant and spirited dance in triple meter. The oboe sets the tone right from the start, so let's hear from James Austin Smith again as he describes it.
The third movement, the gavotte, opens with this very charming oboe line. And there is a certain ease when you play it because you know that it is written not just for your instrument, but for your timbre, for your sound, for your particular oboe way of creating a kind of lilting yet jolly melody that will reach the listener in a way that it wouldn't if it were on the horn or the bassoon.
And here is a little excerpt of the opening of this movement. As you can hear, Tweel tips his hat to the Baroque tradition, but with a distinctly romantic flair. The music sparkles with playful exchanges between the winds and piano. The charming main theme gives way to a lively trio section that's doubly fast and full of energy. The gavotte's grace and good humor make it a delightful moment of lightness before we launch into the fourth and final movement, marked vivace. The main theme bursts forth with energy, sparkling flourishes from the piano answered by quick, agile responses from the winds. Tweel's writing here is particularly humorous as he builds excitement with rhythmic momentum and vibrant exchanges among the instruments, pushing the music toward a brilliant and virtuosic conclusion. ¶¶ Let's hear one last time from James Austin Smith.
When I play this Tweel Sextet, what I love is to feel like when you walk out on stage, you bow and you sit down, and you know that you are going to go on this kind of epic romantic journey from beginning to end. And it's going to be a 30 or 35 minute long journey, but you're going to kind of love all the twists and turns. And so crucially, the audience is going to be there with you, because it's such heart on your sleeve music. You know they can follow you, and you know that they can come with you. I'm looking forward to that moment when we start with those first alternating murmuring chords in the piano, and then when we reach the triumphant conclusion that we have gone on that journey together. That is that's always a joy, and I can't wait to experience that at Music at Menlo.
Throughout the sextet, Tweel's romantic sensibilities shine. Expressive melodies, lush harmonies, and sweeping gestures all contribute to the richness of this beautiful work. It's a glowing example of late romantic chamber music in the hands of the winds and the piano, and we're so glad to share this rarely heard gem with you. This concludes our discussion of Concert Program 3, Winds of Change. A special thank you to Amy Koda for her incredible help in procuring the audio samples, to the organizations who provided access to their catalogs, and to the artists who agreed to share their thoughts on the music. I'm Dmitrya Tappan.
And I'm Hayam Park. We are so grateful you listen, and we're excited to see you at the concerts.
Audio notes are written and produced by Dmitrya Tappan and Heian Park in consultation with David Finkel and Wuhan. Many thanks to James Austin Smith and Sebastian Mantz for speaking with us for this session. Audio excerpts are courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Beethoven Quintet for Piano and Winds, Opus 16, performed by Gilbert Kalish Piano, Stephen Taylor Oboe, Anthony McGill Clarinet, Peter Kolke Bassoon, and Kevin Rivard Horn, courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Mendelssohn Concert Piece No. 1 in F minor, Opus 113, performed by David Schifrin Clarinet, Romilia Gislangua Bassett Horn, and Anne-Marie McDermott Piano, courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Loeffler Rhapsody No. 1, performed by Stephen Taylor Oboe, Richard O'Neill Viola, and Adam Neiman Piano, courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Tweel Sextet in B-flat Major Opus 6, performed by Tara Helen O'Connor Flute, James Austin Smith Oboe, Sebastian Mons Clarinet, Mark Goldberg Bassoon, David Bird Marrow Horn, and Wu Qian Piano, courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Music at Menlo.